From the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, who is stationed in Vicksburg, but is actually here in Tampa for the year. Congratulations. He's also the chair-elect of biogeochemistry section, correct?
Of the wetland soils.
The wetlands, sorry.
One wetland is enough. Soils.
Yeah, right. You've had enough, right? Okay, so anyway, Jacob.
Thank you. Thank you. That's good talk so far, so this will be hard to follow. But I'm glad to be here with you guys in Tampa. And today I'll be talking about a really exciting restoration activity that's been going on across the country, where there's kind of a renewed interest in an older technique utilizing thin layer placement of sediments within marshes to do marsh restoration and to address concerns about sea level rise. So I'd like to acknowledge my coworkers. Dr. Christine Van Zomeren is working with us at the Army Corps of Engineers in Vicksburg, Dr. John White from LSU, who's here with us, and also Dr. Candace Piercy, who's our engineer on the project. And some of the preliminary work that we did on this has been published in a couple journals or is under review, so look for a lot more of this to be coming out here in the next few weeks or months, hopefully. So a lot of project partners involved here. This is definitely a collaborative effort between the Army Corps of Engineers, Nature Conservancy, the Wetlands Institute, the New Jersey DEP, Louisiana State, and then Green Trust Alliance, which is a nonprofit firm that works in the northeastern marshes. So as we look at marshes in general, we know that healthy, stable marshes in the northeastern United States and other parts of the country represent a mosaic of both vegetated areas and stable unvegetated open water areas, commonly referred to as pans or pools. However, when we look at degraded marshes, we see an increase in that open water area. We see edge erosion, subsidence of the marsh, stunted or unhealthy vegetation, marsh fragmentation, and the literature has related a lot of these negative impacts with lack of sediment inputs as well as sea level rise. And so in general, the model that has, you know, been developed since 1916, which was the oldest paper I could find on the topic, written in German and French and English. I read the English portion. We know that increased sea level rise, in addition with a lack of sediment inputs, leads to what's been termed marsh drowning in a number of papers. And we see this in, you know, throughout southern Louisiana has kind of been the typecast for this, where we see increasing fragmentation in open water areas, death of vegetation, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So what has been suggested as a solution to this marsh drowning is that if we can introduce thin layers of sediment into the marsh, that can benefit the marsh while maintaining and helping to support more stable conditions. And you can see that in some of the figures here. We have kind of a stable marsh pool on the marsh plain, and then here is a rapidly degrading marsh where you can see the vegetation starting to fall to pieces. And then from an aerial viewpoint with the infrared imagery, you can see that there's quite a bit of fragmentation and open water forming in this marsh. So this idea of using thin layer placement applications for ecological restoration or ecological benefit is not a new one, but it's one that we haven't seen a lot of effort in over the last decades. Originally started in Louisiana with oil and gas development, they initially started to do dredging in order to access their oil and gas operations in canals in the 1930s and 40s. Later in the 1940s, when they really got busy, was when they started to implement mechanical dragline bucket dredging, and then, more importantly, hydraulic dredging, which really expanded these networks in southern Louisiana, and we can see the negative impacts of that today. For example, the photo on your left, out in Barataria Bay, you can just see how all of those canals cutting has led to increased open water degradation. In the 1950s, mechanical dredging was really at a high point. And as they were doing this dredging, they would just sidecast the material into these spoil banks along the side of the marsh, essentially isolating portions of the marsh from sediment inputs in the greater marsh plain. So as a result, people said, well, that's probably not such a good thing to do. And so as early as the late 1970s, they had this idea, well, let's take that stuff instead of just dumping it right on the sides, let's shoot it out of a cannon back into the marsh, and that'll be a better way to deal with things. seemed like a good idea at the time. And Ron DeLon and others worked on this as early as 1979 and published some papers on it, and they found that you can put up to 30 centimeters of that thin layer deposited material on the vegetative marsh plain, and the Spartina and other vegetative species will just grow right through and not have any negative impacts. So those are some of the kind of the early works done on it. Recently, there's been kind of a reemergence of this as a technique across the country, including places in Florida. And so as a result, our group started looking at three of these projects, one in Narrow River, Rhode Island, one at Seal Beach, California, and then we'll be focusing mostly on a project area in Avalon, New Jersey, where they have done this thin layer placement for marsh restoration. So how do we identify marsh degradation in these systems? Well, at most of the sites we see bank erosion, people report impounding of water, expansion of open water areas, low faunal usage, that's certainly been a concern with some of the Fish and Wildlife Service refuges along the coast, loss of marsh species, unhealthy vegetation, and the influence of invasive species. And so we see a lot of these areas as you see these kind of remnant stands of vegetation as the marsh is kind of turning into Swiss cheese and degrading over relatively short periods of time. So the objectives of this restoration approach are to fill in recently formed open water areas so we can get them back to an elevation where vegetation can recolonize and predominate, stabilizing the marsh plain. We also want to look at supplementing existing vegetated areas so that we can put a little bit of material on to nourish those areas before they start to degrade and essentially prevent die-off of the vegetation and all the negative things that happen when we see those sorts of die-off. And then one big interest is that, you know, especially in the Northeast and other parts of the country, people are really concerned about these marshes keeping up with sea level rise. As we've limited the amount of sediment that's coming into these systems through our anthropogenic activities, we want to make sure that we have some techniques to supplement the marsh elevation as the oceans continue to rise. And these thin layer placement applications may prove useful as a restoration technique to address these concerns. It allows us to more tightly hit a target elevation, and with the spraying of material into the marsh, that can help us control logistics and costs. Instead of having to actually get a pipe out into the marsh, we can spray from this marsh edge. That can help us. So we wanted to know, are there short-term changes in soil properties, the physicochemical properties, and then some biogeochemical properties, and then what are the short-term effects that affect the plant communities? And you can see some of our brave young wetland scientists out there sunk to their bellies in the mud in some of these degraded, unstable marsh surfaces. So the restoration design and construction, here in the bottom corner, you can see this is the cannon that they use to shoot the material out into the marsh. Whoa, that's fun. They did do quite a bit of containment at all these sites to contain where the material went to. We did not want the material going into healthy native marsh areas. The contractor that did the work actually had this thing they called a marsh master, and I'm getting one. If anybody has extra grant money, let me know. We can go in halfsies. So this is what the technique actually looks like. And so there's a dredge just offshore here in the navigation channel. Taking material out of the navigation channel and putting it through a pipe, and then they are shooting it through this cannon out into the marsh. For this particular project in New Jersey, they applied this treatment to 35 acres of marsh in the winter of 2015-2016. So it's pretty impressive to watch them do it. Just here's another picture. Here they're filling in an open water area. So this is a recently open water area that had just formed. And so again, from the marsh edge, we're shooting the material, or as the contractors have labeled it, rainbowing the material into the marsh. And I thought this is a great picture because there is actually a rainbow there, if you can see it. And so in the open water areas, we found that they place material in depths from 33 to 83 centimeters. So that's quite a bit of material to put out into the marsh to try and fill in some of those holes. Conversely, in the vegetated areas, obviously, we want to keep the depths much shallower. And so here are some of the workers out there in a vegetated area where they're placing material, and the depths that we went to there were between 5 and 20 centimeters thick. So within that range that DeLon and others had identified that the marsh vegetation can tolerate and still come back and grow through that newly placed material. So for our monitoring plan, this is actually a study where for once we were brought in on the front end instead of on the back end to clean up somebody's mess. So we actually have a before and after control impact design here, where we have data from the marsh before, and then we're monitoring reference areas as well as the application areas. So we're looking at water levels, vegetation, in fauna, and some other factors. We'll focus on for the rest of the talk on these kind of soil physical and biogeochemical properties. So for our soil sampling, we went back 6 months after they placed the material, and we looked at the material in the top 5 centimeters of the dredge material as well as the top 5 centimeters of the buried marsh. Okay, so this allows us not only to see what's going on in the newly placed material, but also how did that affect the native marsh soil that got buried below. And so we're just doing simple soil cores here, and you can see this is some of the buried marsh material underneath the placed dredge material. So what do we find? In the vegetated areas, so here we're comparing the vegetated areas in reference areas and in placement areas, as well as in placement areas before and after the treatments. And what we saw is that, as expected, bulk density was a lot higher in the dredge material than in the native marsh, which is, you know, this kind of hemic peat material. And then all the nutrient properties, all the total nutrients, as well as the microbial biomass, the potentially mineralizable nitrogen and the extractable ammonia were much higher in the native marsh material than this dredge material we pulled out of the navigation channel. So not unexpected. Much higher organic material, obviously, in the marsh soil than in this mineral material that we've taken from the channel. In the open water areas, we see a similar trend where we increase the bulk density quite a bit from 0.2 grams per centimeter cubed in these kind of unconsolidated open water areas to a bulk density of about 0.8 grams per centimeter cubed. And I highlight that point because based on some research that was done years ago in Louisiana, this bulk density in these unconsolidated materials is below the density required to get Spartina alterniflora to predominate in the marsh. So it was too low density to get the plants to establish in those open water areas. After placement, we have sufficient density for the plants to then colonize those areas. And we'll see the impact of that as we move a little through the talk here. Again, as expected, the nutrient values largely are higher in the native open water areas than in the placed dredge material. However, we did see equal amounts of microbial biomass in both of the systems. Interestingly, when we looked at the marsh in above and what was buried, we saw some interesting trends. Not unexpectedly, the microbial biomass and nitrogen remain higher in the native marsh, but we saw equal amounts of potentially mineralizable nitrogen between the native and buried marshes. So this suggests that those soils are still biologically active, even though they've been buried. And then also another fact that we thought was interesting was the extractable nitrogen was actually higher in the buried marsh soil. And so this suggests that because there's no plants there underneath this stuff, they're not using up a lot of that nitrogen that's down there. And so we would expect that to change over time. And in fact, those buried marsh soils, which remain biologically active, may continue to provide a source of nutrients as plant establishment is induced. So again, we saw increases in bulk density, which may help get plants established, and that buried material remains biologically active, suggesting a potential source of nitrogen when we see plant establishment. So if you actually look at the plants, we do see some positive signs of recovery following placement. So here is an area that was all open water prior to the restoration activity. 6 months after the restoration activity, we started seeing a lot of recruitment of Spartina alterniflora within those restored areas, largely coming up between the cracks in the dredge material. And then at the end of the growing season, somewhat later, we start to see a lot more vegetation coming in. So in summary, the thin layer placement restoration sites are growing. A lot of people have been contacting us and they want the core's dredge material to do these sorts of projects throughout the coast, including here in Florida. We did see some positive increases in bulk density. and some interesting trends in nutrient availability following the project. So I guess the take-home message for us is that this is an interesting new technique, but we want to see more research before we buy in whole hog on doing this across the country. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions if there's time.
Yes, we've got time for a question.
Yes. We hope to look into that with our new LIQOR system that we just got. Super excited. But that is a potential, but we don't know that. I mean, we do know there's a difference as these areas degrade to open water, and that we do see quite a bit of greenhouse gas production when that happens. Yes. Marty. So we did not see high levels of acid sulfate forming material in the dredge material that we got from the channel. However, interestingly, we have seen the potential for some hydrogen sulfide compound development post-placement. So that's something that we're working on right now, and actually something that I'd like to speak with you about during this meeting. If others have questions, I'm happy to take those during the break.
Thank you, Jacob.